Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is a Monday. It's a reaction Monday, a big reaction Monday. Right here with us, Jacob Albracht, Tommy Kester. We're happy to be with you. We're happy to have Jad Chambers back in-house, manning that IHOP hotline. Just brought to you by IHOP. Celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP house faves, all your favorites, for just $6 Monday through Friday. We got Wyatt Thompson coming in, voice of the Wildcats, to go through their win in West Virginia. No worries, right? Trap game? Nah, no problem for the Wildcats as we look ahead to a big one. The big one for a lot of people coming up this weekend. We'll talk Chiefs, of course. We'll talk the NFL. We'll talk KU finally doing what they're supposed to be doing this season. Was very nice to see. A World Series is set. All kinds of good stuff for you today. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Happy Monday. Good to see you today. You know, there are some Mondays that, feel like a good day. There are some Mondays that feel like a Monday. Today, for me, at least, feels like a Monday. You know, like everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. Just kind of running behind, you know, like that just kind of happens that way. But here we are. I'm ready to get into it today. It was a fun weekend of football. So that makes it worth it. Even if you're having a hard time getting around and getting going today, there's a lot of good things to talk about.
Yeah, it was good. You might have been up late if you were like me and pretty interested in that game last night. Maybe we'll have time to get into the Jets Steelers probably tomorrow. But yeah, it was a late night. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Look, the Chiefs get a win. And let's start there because we'll have Wyatt Thompson in to talk a little college football next. The Super Bowl rematch that we've all been looking forward to, right, since the schedules were made, did not feature Rashi Rice, Isaiah Pacheco, Hollywood Brown, Christian McCaffrey, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk for the most part. It was a little different than what we anticipated that game looking like. But the Chiefs have a pretty impressive win, 28-18. The game ball to me goes to Spags for sure. The way the defense played, turned over Brock Purdy three times. San Francisco had every opportunity to go ahead, to score points, to maybe even win that game. But the Chiefs defense just kept coming up big and big and big. And in a game where Patrick Mahomes was not very good, at least through the air, he was great on the ground on a couple of different runs. The Chiefs were able to come away with a 10-point road win. And Tommy, it sort of is this season, right? Like, we can come up with all these weird things that are happening, but at the end of the day, they're 6-0, and they have a win against the Ravens, and they have a win against the Bengals, and they have a win against the 49ers. And you just keep checking them off.
Well, the 49ers are not very good because they
they're decimated.
Well, yeah, but I mean, come on, like, let's be honest here. They're not very good because they're injured, because they've got a lot of people that are out. It's okay to say that they're not very good because they're just not. Like, that's not the same team that the Chiefs played in the Super Bowl. Their record indicates that. Like, it really does. Even, like, before this game with the Niners, they haven't had McCaffrey all season long. They've dealt off and on with different other injuries that have really impacted them and individual players for various games throughout the first six or seven games of the year. So going into the game, I was never really concerned about the Chiefs' ability to not only win the game, but to look pretty good while doing it overall, because they just, the 49ers are just without a lot of their weapons. And, you know, so really I think that the Chiefs went into San Francisco. They did what they needed to do. Defensively, they absolutely were stifling all day long. We've known how good this defense has been in stopping the run, and they were good stopping the run again yesterday. It's been sort of hit and miss off and on with the secondary, but, you know, of course, when you're down Deebo and then Ayuk exits early, and you really can then focus in on just a handful or a couple of guys like George Kittle that, you know, are going to be able to, you know, potentially hurt you. And so the secondary, they did a really good job being aggressive. I think Spags, and I've always believed this, that Spags usually, you know, times blitzes better than any other defensive coordinator in the NFL. They did that really well. I think yesterday they were able to get pressure. They were able to get those interceptions. Purdy threw a couple of really unexplainable passes that the Chiefs picked off. And, you know, ultimately that's what led them to victory. And so this is what this team is. As you mentioned, they're strong defensively. They're going to run the crap out of the ball. And, you know, they're going to pass when it makes sense. But more often than not, they're going to really lean on the run game.
Well, yeah, they have to, right? And I mean, you just look up and down the roster. Juju goes down basically before the game ever gets started with that hamstring that was bothering him. And you don't really have a choice if you're the Chiefs. What's so impressive is that everybody knows that. The defense that they're facing knows that. They know they want to run the ball, and they do it anyway, right? That's what has been what's the most impressive to me for the Chiefs. Not only is it that they're 6-0 and they're overcoming, and Mahomes isn't playing that great, at least statistically, and all these things are happening in the injuries. It's just that other teams know what they want to do, and they can't stop it. They know they want to run the ball. Okay, stop it. Do something about it, and they can't do it. Kareem Hunt wasn't. He didn't have any explosive runs or anything like that, but he did exactly what they needed it to. The explosive runs came from Patrick Mahomes and Mecole Hardman. The defense, though, Tommy, yesterday, credit to Mitch Holthus, he called this before the season started right here. He said he thinks the defense was going to be better. I thought he was crazy. He's right. It is better. And that is wild. And yesterday was a day where San Francisco moved the ball okay on them. But they just like the Chiefs then come up with the big plays. I mean, Purdy was terrible. He was awful. Brady was letting him have it during the broadcast. Like even on plays they did make, he was like, yeah, that was underthrown. They probably could have had more. Like Purdy had a terrible game. And you know, that's a Spag special, right? Just make it brutal on the opposition, confuse them, do all the things that Spagnuolo does. It's crazy. And I think we'll get into this later in the show. You look at it, they're 6-0. They beat that team on the road. Yes, that team is not, it is a shell of itself, but they still beat that team on the road by 10 points. Is this going to be enough moving forward? We see Juju go down again. We know the left tackle is still a problem. Joey Bosa was dominant. They're finding ways to work through it. I guess it just comes down to, and I don't know what I think about this yet, and we don't have to make the call necessarily. Is this enough when it matters the most in the postseason? And I think you have to take that all the way to the Super Bowl. So when you think about that, like you have to think about, is it enough to beat the Ravens? Is it enough to beat the Lions right now? Or maybe even the Vikings, if you still put them there, or the Texans or the Packers. Like, I think you have to envision it that way as the trade deadline looms, because left tackle is a problem, right? Wanya Morris, but they worked around it, right? They figured out a way around it. And wide receiver, I guess they just don't need any. They'll just keep throwing the tight ends and running the ball.
I can tell you right now, especially after what they did yesterday, they're not going to go and acquire a wide receiver. Like, and that's just not – I would be shocked if that happens, because Juju goes down early, and ultimately they don't need him. They don't need him. They find other ways to work. Now, ideally, would you like to have – Juju in the lineup? Sure, you'd love to have Rashee Rice and Hollywood Brown in the lineup too, but you don't, and the Chiefs are still 6-0. Like, they're going to keep riding this. They're going to keep playing the way that they feel like they need to play to get these victories. I just don't think that they're going to go and try to make an addition, and I do think that if they even decided to go and do that, it would be of little impact anyway for the remainder of this season. I also, from a left tackle perspective, I'm not willing yet to say that left tackle is a problem. Left tackle was a problem yesterday, but you have to look at who was opposite of Wanya Morris, and that's Nick Bosa, who's a game wrecker in general. Like, basically every left tackle in the National Football
League. Trey Hendrickson wrecked him too for the Bengals.
But basically every left tackle in the National Football League looks bad when they're lined up against Nick Bosa. That's what makes Nick Bosa so special in the NFL. I would suggest that, and I don't think they're going to do any kind of acquisition before the deadline, but if they did, they absolutely should prioritize left tackle over wide receiver, like 100%. If you're going to go and you're going to push your chips in and say, we're going to go and make an acquisition, which again, I don't think they're going to do either way. I think you got to go get a left tackle before you go get a wide receiver. Wide receiver just seems inconsequential with the way that the Chiefs want to play football right now.
It does. The problem with left tackle is there is not going to be one worth getting out there. Teams don't trade left tackles. I mean, I know you've looked historically at the trades of wide receivers. Look at historically the trades of left tackles. They don't happen.
You're right. So again, I don't think they're going to do anything.
Right.
And I think a lot of it is because of that.
I still think it's slightly the good news for the Chiefs is they do get one more quality game before the deadline. And I mean, it's right before the deadline. The Buccaneers game is the day before the trade deadline. So, you know, if they got into a situation where they didn't think the offense could keep up, maybe, but I still don't have a strong lean on whether they will or whether they won't with a wide receiver. I think they got to see what's going on with Juju. I don't think they can with left tackle. I don't think it matters too much. I want to know when Hollywood Brown comes back, because that's something you have to think about too. Like, I think all of this is just now a question for a Super Bowl, right? It's not a question of getting there. It's not a question of anything else. It's a question of, do you have enough in the tank if you play a Super Bowl on a neutral field against XYZ team? And I think they get the luxury of thinking about it that way too, because they are 6-0 and they can look what Brett Veach can, that the team in the locker room is never going to look ahead, but Brett Veach can look ahead and think about those kinds of things.
I think you also have to keep in mind the recipe for the success that we've seen from Kansas City through the first six games. And really it was all wrapped up in what we saw yesterday. They controlled the ball. They controlled the time of possession. They ran the ball like crazy. And when they did throw, in a lot of cases, they had three tight ends out there. They had Kelce, Fortson, and Gray. They want to control the tempo. You can do that and absolutely have success when your defense is playing the way that it is. Keep in mind, they should be getting Isaiah Pacheco back in, what, probably 6 weeks or so, 8 weeks from now. Like, you'll have him more than likely down the stretch. And if you've got a tandem of him and Kareem Hunt in the backfield, you want to control the time of possession anyway and only throw it when necessary. It's a different kind of Chiefs offense, but it can absolutely be effective. I think what they have right now is absolutely enough playing this kind of football to go all the way.
Yeah. I agree, because their defense is so good. Yeah. And they're just so dang good in the interior of the line, even if they're not good at left tackle. If I told you that the Chiefs would walk into this season without three of their four top options in the offense, and Travis Kelce, who's the fourth, has done almost nothing, they're 6-0 with wins against those teams. Like, this is the NFL. It's crazy. And as many things that went wrong for them last year, they're all going right for them this year. 6-0, win against the Niners. We'll have more on that game, including Patrick Mahomes. God, doing some things that just make you laugh, honestly. But when we come back, we'll talk a little Cat football. K-State, big winners last week ahead of the Sunflower Showdown this week. Voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, joins Sports Daily next. Don't go away.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
NFL football available for free here on KFH and on the Odyssey app. Tune into 97.5 and 1240 KFH tonight at 7 after the Chris Lamb Show for Monday Night Football. Tampa Bay hosting Baltimore, one of the games of the week. You can simply download the Odyssey app and search for KFH at game time to listen as well. And joining us right now as we begin to talk some college football from the weekend, voice of the K-State Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson. K-State, no doubt about it, right? Just like we all suspected. No worries out there in West Virginia, 45-18. Of course, that's not the case. Everybody had a lot of concern about that game and where it fell on the schedule. But just a really impressive performance. And Wyatt, of all the great things in that game, to me, I think the most important thing and the thing that stands out the most, and we wondered about this, Avery Johnson got hurt, dinged up 2 weeks ago, and we wondered if he would be able to run as normal in this game. He didn't run the ball one time, but he threw it almost for 300 yards and three touchdowns, and I think showed everybody, hey, he's a passer as much as he's a runner.
You know, and honestly, if we're being 100% blunt, we've kind of said all along he can do both. And I think he's proving that he can do that. Was he a better runner at the beginning of the year than he was a thrower? Yeah, probably. But I think he's starting to catch up on a lot of fronts that way. And good to be on with you guys again. I was really proud of his effort, because at the end of the day, they stacked the box, had five guys at the line of scrimmage, and says, DJ Giddens will not beat us tonight. You are going to have to throw the football to win. And after a little bit, K-State said, okay, let's go do it. I thought it was a really hard game until Garrett Green was injured.
Yeah.
Certainly started to turn K-State's way in a big way after that. And you can kind of understand that. The guy's a really good run threat. They were doing a pretty decent job. But I think you could kind of tell from the get-go that this was a fragile team from a mindset for West Virginia, shaken by the loss at home last week, 2 weeks ago now, I guess, to Iowa State. And I think K-State just kind of wore them out, actually. They played a ton of guys and really played pretty good football. Even in the second half when running was hard, you know, they were getting more in the second half than they did in the first. That's obvious.
Wyatt, going back to what you mentioned about DJ Giddens, and obviously that was the game plan for the Mountaineers defensively, was to stop the run, to shut down Giddens. I thought what was really impressive to me was not only did the Wildcats then need to pass the ball, but they were able to get Giddens involved in the pass game more. So it wasn't like DJ just took a back seat and didn't do anything. I mean, he and Johnson connected the 55-yard pass down to the West Virginia one at one point in the game. They got him involved in other ways too, which I thought was really important considering that, you know, he's obviously such a dynamic playmaker.
That's such a good point from my perspective because, you know, a good back that is having that kind of production and you don't have a lot of success early, you could get frustrated. But DJ, that's not him, right? It's not his makeup. It's not who he is. And I think he just kind of kept grinding and knowing that there's going to be some things out there for him, whether it be in the run game or the pass game. And there were, as I said a moment ago, the farther the game went on, you could see K-State was kind of starting to get some feel in the run game, and that helped him. But I've also said this for a long, long time. The guy really has remarkable hands and continues to just be stellar in the pass game. And I'm sitting here looking. They targeted him just two times and had the one catch. But that one catch was for 53. That was one of the bigger plays in the game, frankly.
A lot of big plays defensively. And I know the Green injury you mentioned had a lot to do with West Virginia slowing way down, but I do think the defense is finding a groove a little bit. I mean, I think it's the offense for K-State, and I think it's fair when you talk about K-State to start with the offense, but I do think the defense is showing signs of life and, you know, continuing to show us what they want to do, which is get after the passer and let teams throw it on them and not run it on them. But West Virginia ran the ball pretty well. And they still, you know, at the end of the day, I think they'd look at it and say, yeah, we feel good about that defensive performance.
I think you make another good point there, too. But I will add this, and I agree with what you said in that they ran the ball pretty well. But if you closely look at the numbers, they averaged 3.5 yards a carry. K-State's going to take that every single time, right? Now, Garrett Green averaged 8.1. Let's tell it like it is, right? I mean, there's a big difference there. But I thought, I mean, you look at C.J. Donaldson, averaged 2.8. Jaheim White, 2.6. You get the idea. They did a good job on their running backs. But Garrett was, and he's a handful for a lot of people. But back to your point about the defense, I love the fact that they're playing so many guys. And it's not just that they're playing guys. Those guys are starting to be productive. I would throw out as an example in this particular game, Jack Fabris in his game. I thought Jack played one of his best football games as a Wildcat, and it really didn't have that much to do with the interception. It helps, but he did a lot of good things on the defensive side. But we're continuing to see Toby Osunsami and those types of guys, Ryan Davis, helping out. And one thing about this defense that I think has kind of somewhat flown under the radar, fellas, tell me what you think of this, is that the defensive front guys, I mean, you're getting good quality play out of Damian Ilalio right now and Uso, and even to a smaller degree maybe, but still good quality football out of Travis Bates, and then maybe a tiny bit out of Asher Tomaszewski. That's pretty good depth at that defensive tackle rotation spot.
You know, going into the season, Wyatt, we had a lot of conversations about what the Wildcats were going to do from a tight end perspective when you lose a guy like Ben Sinnott going to the draft. How is that production going to be replaced? Will they be able to get tight ends involved in the offense? And clearly on Saturday, Avery Johnson was able to do that with the touchdowns, not only to Will Ancio, but also Garrett Oakley. As you've seen this season progress, have you noticed that growth from these tight ends to be able to get more involved in the passing game?
And I love the question. The short answer, yes, and I'll get to that in a second. But a tip of the cap, even though I'm not wearing one, to Ben Sinnott. He got his first yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw that or not. But I'm so excited for him. He's such a great young guy. And I congratulate him. Now, with all of that said, let's put it into perspective this way. You look at the tight ends, and you saw Garrett Oakley get hurt early. You saw Braden Lofton get hurt after that. And yet, K-State has 8 receiving touchdowns from the tight ends this year, right? Oakley has 2. Lofton has 2. Swanson has 2. Fancio has 2. That's pretty good production, right? I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah, Tommy took the words out of my mouth, and it's apropos. We're talking about the Chiefs and the way they've redesigned this offense, and they run 3 and 4 tight ends out there, and teams don't have an answer for it. You know, I would imagine for K-State, we'll call it an embarrassment of riches. I think that's just they're fortunate to have a bunch of good ones. But, man, with a young quarterback who's making his way, to have that position be so shored up has to be a tremendous help for a young quarterback.
So true. And I think if you go back and look, and this probably from my mind defines the growth of Avery as much as anything, go back and look at the 2 catches in the end zone to the tight ends, and the tight window, and the tough play, and the ball is right on the money. If that doesn't satisfy you, go look at the long throw to Jay Jacks early in the Jaden Jackson. It's like, you know, it's right there. I mean, I love the kid's work ethic, Avery Johnson, and just what he's doing. And in the same breath, it's like, I mean, I'm on cloud 9 when I come to work here every day. I'm not going to lie about that. But when I think about what lies ahead for him, including next year and beyond, how do you not get geeked up about that? I mean, he's an unbelievable talent and an unbelievable guy.
Wyatt, defensively, Marcus Siegel had a great game, of course, returned that interception for a touchdown. He added on 9 tackles, 2 of them were for loss. It really seemed like he was constantly involved defensively, had a couple of pass breakups as well. And this is a guy that I know that has really battled to try to get into this position this season, to be able to hold on to those interceptions and then, of course, be able to return one back. That's been a lot of fun also to watch as the season has gone on.
We weren't as late playing this game as the games prior on the road with the game in Provo and the game in Boulder. And I don't know if you heard this, but if you didn't, go back and listen to Marquise visiting with Stan and I in postgame, because I think it tells you everything you need to know about him. He's a very soft-spoken guy by nature, but he talked about last year having, you know, a few, whether that means 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, I'm not totally sure. But, you know, he basically said, I got tired of being called Stonehands. And he worked on it all last spring, all through the summer, into camp. And I'll just finish it off by saying this. If you want to get excited about how well a guy is playing, ask Chris Kleiman about Marquise Siegel. He just glows every time, because he's usually in the right spot. He usually makes big plays. And he had absolutely one of his best football. I mean, Austin Romaine had 12 tackles in the game, and Siegel had 9. I mean, that's a lot of work, good quality work. And I'm happy for Siegel. He's a neat young guy.
I am too. And I know K-State fans, they probably don't care, but boy, KU picked a good time to finally get it right, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
You got the Sunflower Showdown coming this week. They had easily their most complete game of offense against Houston on the weekend. And I know it's against Houston, but man, when you look at what they've dealt with this year and what they have been going through to get to that spot, it's a reminder that Jalen Daniels is still there. It's a reminder that they have really talented running backs. They have really talented receivers. And he does appear to be coming back, or at minimum, you know, finally meshing with his offensive coordinator. And now this becomes probably a little bit more of a test maybe than we would have thought 2 or 3 weeks ago in the Sunflower Showdown.
I agree with that on all fronts, to be honest with you. I didn't see all of the KU game. I'll watch that as I go throughout the week. But that looked more like the Daniels –
yes.
Of 2 years. Well, I guess not. Yeah. You do the math. But
yeah,
back when he was playing his best football, that's kind of what it looked like. All along, I think if you're being honest about it, they've lost some hard games. And as it turns out, okay, I'll say that again. As it turns out, UNLV and Illinois are pretty darn good, fellas.
Yeah.
Right? Now, you can look at some other games. I get that. But I do wonder if they're not starting to catch a little traction here. And with the running backs, I mean, Devin Neal's one of the best players in this league, in period, end of story. Daniel's probably the same. You mentioned the veteran receivers. This team has seven seniors starting on offense at last count and eight on defense. So it's pretty decent. There's a reason they were picked where they were. Now, again, you can argue all day of why they're this or why they're not that. But I think you have to, Stan says this all the time, you have to gauge an opponent with what they are when they're playing at their optimum pace and level. And I think that's how you have to look at Kansas. They're certainly capable. 100% true.
There's one thing, Wyatt, that I've noticed over the last couple of weeks with Avery Johnson that I have been really impressed with. We, of course, everybody knows about all of his attributes and athleticism and everything that he brings to the table. That is well known and well documented. Over the last couple of weeks, I feel like his poise, if that's the right word, has continued to grow. Like he looks significantly more comfortable than he did at the very beginning of the season. The progressions are there. The pre-snap reads are there. Everything that he's doing from a poise perspective, the way he carries himself, doesn't let the moment get too big. All of those different things, I feel like it's rounding into form, and especially when you're getting into Sunflower Showdown week, it's a big week. You know, of course, the game is at home, and you're going to have, you know, thousands and thousands of people there to, you know, cheer on you beating your arch rival, all of that. That could be really easy to have the moment end up being too big for you, but I don't get the sense that that's Avery Johnson at all.
Tommy, did you say K-State's actually going to play a home game this week?
They are. They're back at home.
I can't tell you how excited I am for that after a month not being here. And the cool part is that through what we've been through to this point, you have three of your next four at home. The only exception to that is next week we go to Houston. But your point about Avery, I think there's a couple of things to probably say here. He has grown a lot this year, and you knew he would, through mistakes, through great play, probably everything in between. I'm sure you would mostly agree with that thought. One thing that I think probably should be mentioned here, because he, and I've talked about him and his football knowledge and acumen and work ethic before, but one thing that I think really helps, every now and again, you know, I'll look back at a game or see it, you know, on the monitor, you know, while we're calling the game, and he's over there, and when he and Matt Wells are in conversation, you can just see a young man that is locked in. And I so appreciate that, because I think Matt Wells has really helped him settle in. He's done a lot of it too, without question, but I think coaching matters, man. And I think Matt Wells has done a really good job with him.
I think they've all done a good job. I can't wait for this game. I am so happy that we saw KU play the way that they did last weekend to get a really good Sunflower Showdown in it. K-State comes into this game, by the way, as a 10-point favorite, which is interesting at home. That's about right. I think a lot of people are going to think that's not enough, but you had to kind of watch KU last week. But I'll tell you, Wyatt, right now they've got the over-under, and I don't know how much you care, pay attention to this stuff, at 55 points. It feels like they're going to score a lot of points in this game collectively. And K-State's defense, as they look good against West Virginia, they're going to be really tested this week. And I think we could see a fireworks show this week in Manhattan.
Yeah, I think one of the intriguing matchup in this game to me is K-State's defensive front against KU's offensive line. And maybe vice versa, too, right? I mean, KU's defensive front is probably a little bit better than perception, honestly. One thing that we didn't talk about with the victory at West Virginia, K-State played without their starting right tackle, Carver Willis, who I think will probably be back this week. So excited for Andrew Lane Gang to get his first career start, and I thought he did an admirable job, especially when you consider this. Think about this, fellas. He had played 10 snaps at tackle all year prior to Saturday night. Most of his work had been done at either the left or the right guard. So K-State is developing, and John Pastore did a nice job too. They're developing depth there. And prior to the West Virginia game, remember now, this is a team that was averaging about 240 rushing yards a game. I'm hoping they can get in the vicinity of that. I'm not going to kid you. If they do that, I like their chances.
It's coming. It's coming. So yeah. This is one of obviously the fun games of the year, and we wait for it every year. It's a 7 o'clock kick. It is in prime time. We got that news recently here too. So it'll be kind of up by itself on a national telecast, all eyes on it. What do you guys have special coming up? We know this has got to be a fun one for you guys each and every year on the network.
Well, here's the plan. Okay. I hope this comes to fruition because the two players that I've requested to visit with this week, I think are both Kansas kids that have a lot of ties and can speak to this rivalry and what it is. One is Ty Bowman, who we didn't mention, had a terrific game last week against West Virginia, 3 catches, 27 yards. That doesn't sound like a lot, but one was a third down conversion. One was a fourth down conversion when the game was still relatively tight. He's also exceptional as a special teams guy. And then I'm going to also try to visit with Keenan Garber, who's from Lawrence Free State. He's been here a long time, started as a receiver. He's been a corner and frankly has developed into one of the best cover corners in our league. And I think both of those guys can give us a real full idea of what it's like to play in this game. Because you know what? If you're a Kansas kid, regardless of which side of the line you're on, you love this stuff, right?
Yep.
This is a game they all point to. Every time we go out to the Catbacker events, I hear people all the time that one of the first things they say to those players after welcome, we're glad you're here, is you're going to beat Kansas, right? It's been like that for 23 years, guys. It's just the way it works.
And it's been not a foregone conclusion recently. And that's what we love about it is that you don't just write this one off. It should be a lot of fun. We'll be looking forward to the call this weekend. Wyatt, we know you guys will do an awesome job and we appreciate these visits each week.
You're very kind, fellas. Great talking to you. Appreciate it.
There goes Wyatt Thompson. We'll get into KU's win maybe when we come back, and then we'll spend a lot of time on the Chiefs in the second hour, Tommy. But I thank you. Thank goodness KU finally gave us that. And maybe it's too little too late for a lot of things, but it's not too little too late for this game this week. And you know what the most important thing KU will do the rest of the way is. I mean, it's very clear. It's very obvious. It'll be the Sunflower Showdown game.
Yeah, they want to play spoiler really bad. I mean, basically Kansas State is, right on the verge. Like, if they have one more loss, like that's going to take them out of contention for the Big 12 title. Kansas would love to be the team to hand them that second conference loss. And so it's going to be a fiery week for sure. It always is. And I'm looking forward to talking more about it as the week goes on.
And it was almost K-State getting a lot of the cushion they needed in the Big 12. The rest of the why it was so close to being such a perfect weekend for the Cats. But let's talk about the Sunflower Showdown. We'll talk about that as well. I want to say thank you to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up each and every morning here on KFH. Glad to be here with you. It's all Brockton Caster. Jad Chambers back in the chair. We'll be back. More Sports Daily coming your way.
KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Get out to Crestview, check out the great facility. Still plenty of time for some golf. 36 holes to choose from. Tommy and I, both members out there, we both love it. We think you will too. Different membership options, and they'll give you a tour of the facilities. Just tell them we sent you from Sports Daily and go say hello. Tommy, it was almost a perfect weekend for the Wildcats. Texas Tech loses. You had Iowa State on the ropes at home against UCF. You had BYU on the ropes at home against Oklahoma State. But BYU and Iowa State both find ways to win those games at home. You do get a little help with Texas Tech. That's nice. Remember, they don't play Texas Tech, though, so they're still in a tiebreaker situation with them. But it was, as we've asked this question 1,000 times, can they afford to lose again? We don't think they can. Just a reminder of how wild the Big 12 is. And remember, the Big 12 only had one game and as a double-digit, spread over the weekend. Only one, and it was Iowa State who almost lost. But what might have been, we sit here the same way. There are now 6 teams in the Big 12 with 0 or 1 losses in conference play. Do with that what you will. 6 of them. So you just got to keep winning. And this weekend against KU, it's going to get a lot tougher. The Jayhawks, easily their best performance. And yeah, I know it was against Houston and it was at home. I know all that stuff. But man, you got to start somewhere, right? And that's a, you know, finally, at least you've got a start, I guess, for KU. It feels like they finally started the season offensively the way they thought that we thought they could.
Yeah, I want to go back to the Big 12 standings really quick, because I know that you mentioned kind of the way that things panned out on Saturday for the Wildcats and their, you know, hopes for a Big 12 championship. When you look at the two teams in front of them, BYU and Iowa State, obviously the Wildcats will play Iowa State and Farmageddon to wrap up the season. But BYU, their remaining schedule is pretty easy. I mean, they're on the road at UCF, on the road at Utah. They play Kansas at home, on the road at Arizona State, and they finish at home against Houston. I mean, that's a pretty good five-game stretch for BYU. So it's hard for me to think that, you know, the Wildcats, I don't think they, I mean, we, as we all have said before, they can't afford to lose another game if they want to stay in the race. It'd be different if one of those two teams had one loss, but with both BYU and Iowa State both undefeated in conference play, and the fact that BYU would hold the tiebreaker over Kansas State, your chances are significantly less, if not zero, if you lose another game here on out. So, I mean, that's the way that it was going into the West Virginia game. It's the way it's going to be this weekend against Kansas. And like I mentioned before the break, the Jayhawks would love to play spoiler. They, coming out of that bye week, of course, playing Houston on Saturday, looked like the Jayhawks that we wanted them to be, that we expected them to be, basically all season long when they were going through that rough stretch. They're improving. They played significantly better. The play calling was significantly better. Just everything completely from top to bottom was night and day different for the Jayhawks in the positive way. And that's great timing leading up to the Sunflower Showdown.
And they didn't even really have Hyshaw in the game either. It was, I mean, look, it's all been sort of the spotlight on Jalen Daniels, and
he looked great.
16 of 21. That's a Jalen Daniels line, right? Not some of these others. And he has progressively looked a whole lot better for 2 weeks in a row.
Yes.
That's what I really
you
like.
You want
to
know what this is. And I said,
it's growth.
I said it all the way back near the beginning of the season when he wasn't looking like vintage Jalen Daniels. So much of this was rust. It had been so long since he had been on the football field and being able to play at that high level, dealing with the injuries and was shut down last year and all of that. It takes some time. It takes some time to get worked back in there. And it had gotten progressively better and better week in and week out. I mean, this is the same guy that a month ago we were having a debate about whether or not he should be benched as the starting quarterback. It took him a little bit of time to shake that rust off, but he did. And he's back. And well, I have no reason to believe that that's not going to continue.
I don't either. And the reality of the situation is now they can afford for him to work through the rust. It doesn't matter anymore.
And I think he did.
I think he did too. Yeah. At the times we were having those questions, it was like their season's getting away from them. The season already got away from them, right? So now it's like, let's get Jalen, because Shreve's brought this up last week. He has another year of eligibility. It's, you know, and I don't know what that means. Who knows? But yes, you know, for me with him, it's always been about, it's been his accuracy that has been way off. It wasn't anything physical. He just was missing throws, and he hasn't been now. He's been a far more accurate passer, you know, the last 2 weeks. He was just under 60% against Arizona State, but he's 75%, 76%. That's what Jalen Daniels is. He ran the ball a little bit too.
He did. And we're not talking about just, you know, short and intermediate passes. He dropped a dime for a touchdown to Quentin Skinner. That was a 55, 60 yard touchdown pass, whatever that was to Skinner. That was beautiful. It was placed perfectly. And you know, give
passes
credit.
He just wasn't making, you know, throws he was not making.
Give credit to Skinner for bringing it in. I mean, there was good coverage on that play from Houston.
They got many ballers on that team.
They do.
Man, it's like I watched that game. And I'm so happy that they're back, at the same time so frustrated that, like, my goodness, like, this team is so much better than their record indicates. Now, at the end of the first half, I was like, are they really? Because Houston scores those 14 points in the second quarter, and they drive down, and KU ended up getting there. I was like, God dang it. Like, here we go again at the end of a half, just like letting go of everything. Defense, like, it just, but they got things settled in. It'll be an interesting matchup with K-State, because KU, in theory, can can match up favorably to what we've seen out of the K-State defense this year. Now, KU's also got to be able to stop somebody, you know, and this will be probably the best offense they've played, quite honestly, all year long. So, you know, they'll have to have their best game of the year for them to have any chance, I think, this weekend. But again, 55.5, I see shootout city all over this.
Well, and I think the largest reason that the Jayhawks got the win on Saturday that we haven't talked about yet is they won the turnover battle. Kobe Bryant was phenomenal. I mean, he had 3 picks in the game. He tied a KU record for interceptions in one game. You know, look for the Wildcats, and I know that we'll talk much more about this game later in the week, but my first thought is look for the Wildcats to try to completely take Kobe Bryant out of the game. Like, don't even throw to his side of the field. The Jayhawks have really struggled this season.
Yeah,
the Jayhawks have really struggled this season defensively in stopping mobile quarterbacks. Avery Johnson, I think we saw his arm against West Virginia. We're going to see his legs this weekend. That's why he's a dual threat quarterback and so good at all of it. So that's really been the Achilles heel defensively for the Jayhawks. I think that we'll see Kansas State lean into that.
Yeah, they don't need to throw it to any particular player. They throw it to about 13 guys in any individual game. When we come back, let's talk Chiefs. We'll get more. We scratched the surface on the 6-0 start, all the impressive things. Let's get a little bit into this Patrick Mahomes stuff. My goodness. Jad's got some great audio from it that we'll get to. Those two runs, like, just get out of here with that stuff. It's just incredible. We'll come back. That's where we start hour number two. Your calls, your comments. The IHOP hotline is back open, 869-1240. We're coming back with more Sports Daily right after this.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrocht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrocht and Tommy Kester. And we are ready to rock and roll here into hour number two as we are reacting to things that we saw this weekend. A lot of football talk, obviously, on a Monday. We've talked just a little bit about the Chiefs, and that's where we'll start this hour. Got into K-State's win, a little bit into KU's win. It's all available for you and open for conversation on the IHOP hotline, which you can celebrate the weekdays now with new IHOP House Faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. So we'll go back to the Chiefs here, Tommy, because the Patrick Mahomes runs were just ridiculous. Jad has some audio here on the runs, and then the one big one, the touchdown run, his comments after the game. So let's get those ready for you and play those out here. Here we go from Mitch Holthus on the Chiefs Radio Network.
to go in the game. Kansas City 14. San Francisco 12. Fourth down. Less than a yard for a touchdown. Mahomes takes the snap and wants to throw it. He'll step up into the pocket. Flag on the play. Mahomes is into the end zone. Touchdown! Kansas City! Second down, Kansas City. They say 7 at the 37, so a good spot for the Chiefs, leading by 2. A little over a minute left, third quarter, out of the shotgun. Mahomes in the pocket. He's going to scramble to the left side and gets by him, out the defender, 35-yard line. Mahomes, step and go run, still on his feet, 15, 10, and inside the 5. The Tennessee Titans of 2019 are going, we've seen that before. He ain't going to go out of bounds. Mahomes runs for 33 yards. Stopping and going, hip dropping.
I actually was not trying to like lower my shoulder. I was trying to like absorb the hit. I knew I was gonna be right there in the end zone, and that dad bod, man, just had enough weight on me where he went down. So it wasn't like I was necessarily trying to like seek out contact. I was trying to absorb it and get in the end zone, and just ended up looking good for me.
Mahomes does things physically that surprise us all the time. That surprised me. Because Mustafa was playing well, like he was all over the place, and he just bounced off of him. Looked like they were trying to tackle Derrick Henry. in the end zone. And Mahomes, he went on to say later, like, he doesn't try to do that. The last time he remembers lowering his shoulder like that, he sprained his shoulder in college and Iowa State beat him by 50 points. So it's not something he's trying to do, but it happened. But it happened. And I made this joke to friends. Like, I haven't seen Mustafa get trampled like that, Tommy, since the water buffalo, since he was betrayed by Scar.
How long, like, you had that one holstered up and ready to go?
Well, so let me tell you a little story about that, because I did send that out. And then after I sent it to, like, people, like, by text, I was like, I should have put that one on social media. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
So I'm telling my wife that story later. I'm like, oh, man, I had this. And she was like, it's not Mustafa, it's Mufasa. And I'm like, all right, fine. Like, whatever. Like, get out of here. Like, because I was proud of that
one. Yeah.
I was proud of that one. But it was. Like, it was just like, what the hell was that? Yeah, I thought that was more impressive than the sideline run. The sideline run, we've seen that before, right? We've seen the agility. We've seen the start-stop. We've seen all that. We've never seen him truck anybody. I mean, he trucked him.
Yeah. Can we just, like, just again, salute just the overall greatness of Patrick Mahomes, because things like that, I think I've mentioned this before, things like that, they're great. Don't get me wrong. I don't go crazy for it, because, like, I'm so accustomed to seeing him do things that we've never seen, where I'm just sort of like, yeah, like, that's Mahomes. That's what he does. Completely unexpected. Expect the unexpected. That's Patrick Mahomes. It was great. I mean, both of those plays were phenomenal. And especially in the context of the game when he wasn't having a ton of success throwing the ball, threw a couple of interceptions. That's become, you know, sort of a thing this year, him throwing picks. In the context of all of that, that's what makes those runs that much more impressive, is just the fact that the Chiefs really needed them. They absolutely needed them, because the passing game really wasn't working the way that Mahomes, you know, would have liked them to. So, but as far as just the overall, like, wow factor, like, jaw-dropping impact, yeah, it's there. But I don't get, like, wild and crazy over him anymore, because I'm just so accustomed to Mahomes doing wild and crazy things all the time that we never expect.
I got wild and crazy for that one. That one surprised me. By the way, another one of these, the Chiefs are 6-0, ridiculous, just crazy, just absurd numbers things. Patrick Mahomes leads the league in interceptions. His quarterback rating, I don't even know how far down the list it is of starting quarterbacks, but it is way down the list. Yeah. Like, you got to scroll to the next page kind of bad in quarterback rating. And the Chiefs are 6-0. They don't have anybody on offense. He's not playing up to his. Now, he's playing different, is the reality for Mahomes. It's different. He's still playing very well because he's making plays like that. He's just playing different. But, I mean, he hasn't been great this year. He didn't have a great line yesterday. And all of these things, like, we just sit here and they're 6-0 playing the schedule that they've played. It is remarkable to, like, and that's what, so back to the last hour, I'm like, everything about this to me, like, it's almost like last year when things were unraveling, I kept saying, hang tight. Like, they got Mahomes, they got Kelce. This defense is great. They'll be fine. They're equipped to win in the postseason. And I think all of that stuff is still true. Defense is even better. I don't think Travis Kelce is the same factor he was a year ago. I do think that's different. I just keep going back to, like, can they just continue to do this all year? And will there be enough reserves just coming through? Like, I just, what I would hate and what, like, this, and I don't feel like it's going to happen, but I'm like, at what point does the wind come out of the sails and all the good fortune go the other way? And is probably sooner than later, honestly, probably not like something that's all of a sudden going to happen in the postseason, but it's been wild. And, like, in the pendulum swings and the, you know, the karma back to the middle of the NFL that exists, it's like, how much longer can 6-0 with Mahomes not putting up numbers at all and all these injuries? And, I mean, you build it around the defense. I mean, that's the bottom line. But, man, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's what the Chiefs have done, and it's what they'll continue to do. And I think that I remember us having this conversation a few weeks ago about the Chiefs being comfortable playing this way. And it was kind of
that they are.
It was kind of a debate at the time between you and I. And I think that, you know, at the time, both of us were like, yeah, like, they are comfortable playing this way. But at least my opinion was, it's not the way that they want to play. It's not the way that in an ideal world they would like to play. Like, you look at Patrick Mahomes and his stat lines game by game, that's not the way that Patrick Mahomes would like to play. Those are not the stat lines that he would like to have. You know, you would love to be able to see more production in the passing game. Of course, the injuries play a large role in that for sure, but they're comfortable leaning into that. They're comfortable leaning into the run game and Kareem Hunt really being kind of the bell cow running back, at least as of now. And then really, you know, guys like Noah Gray, who had his best game as a pro yesterday. Kelce is out there and I think provides, of course, a lot of attention just because of who he is. Even just his presence on the field is going to attract attention. You know, and Jody Fortson is out there too. And then it's kind of a hodgepodge of receivers. They're comfortable with that. They're comfortable.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester. And we are ready to rock and roll here into hour number two as we are reacting to things that we saw this weekend. A lot of football talk, obviously, on a Monday. We've talked just a little bit about the Chiefs, and that's where we'll start this hour. Got into K-State's win, a little bit into KU's win. It's all available for you and open for conversation on the IHOP hotline, which you can celebrate the weekdays now with new IHOP House faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. So we'll go back to the Chiefs here, Tommy, because the Patrick Mahomes runs were just they were just ridiculous. So Jad, I believe Jad has some audio here on the runs, and then the one big one, the touchdown run, his comments after the game. So let's get those ready for you and play those out here. Here we go from Mitch Holthus on the Chiefs Radio Network.
14-17 to go in the game. Kansas City 14. San Francisco 12. Fourth down. Less than a yard for a touchdown. Mahomes takes the snap and wants to throw it. He'll step up into the pocket. Flag on the play. Mahomes is into the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City. Second down, Kansas City. They say 7 at the 37. So a good spot for the Chiefs, leading by 2. A little over a minute left, third quarter. Out of the shotgun. Mahomes in the pocket. He's going to scramble to the left side and gets by him at the defender, 35-yard line. Mahomes, step and go run. Still on his feet, 15, 10, and inside the 5. The Tennessee Titans of 2019 are going, we've seen that before. He ain't going to go out of bounds. Mahomes runs for 33 yards, stopping and going, hip dropping.
I actually was not trying to, like, lower my shoulder. I was trying to, like, absorb the hit. I knew I was going to be right in the end, right there in the end zone, and that dad bod, man, just had enough weight on me where he went down. So it wasn't like I was necessarily trying to, like, seek out contact. I was trying to absorb it and get in the end zone, and just ended up looking good for me.
Mahomes does things physically that surprise us all the time. That surprised me. Because Mustafa was playing well, like he was all over the place, and he just bounced off of him. Looked like they were trying to tackle Derrick Henry in the end zone. And Mahomes, he went on to say later, like, he doesn't try to do that. The last time he remembers lowering his shoulder like that, he sprained his shoulder in college, and Iowa State beat him by 50 points. So it's not something he's trying to do, but it happened. But it happened. And I made this joke to friends. Like, I haven't seen Mustafa get trampled like that, Tommy, since the water buffalo, since he was betrayed by Scar.
How long, like, you had that one holstered up and ready
well,
to go?
Well, so let me tell you a little story about that, because I did send that out. And then after I sent it to, like, people, like, by text, I was like, I should have put that one on social media. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
So I'm telling my wife that story later. I'm like, oh, man, I had this. And she was like, it's not Mustafa, it's Mufasa. And I'm like, all right, fine. Like, whatever, like, get out of here. Like, cause I was proud of that.
Oh, yeah.
I was proud of that one, but it was just like, what the hell was that? Yeah, I thought that was more impressive than the sideline run. The sideline run, we've seen that before, right? We've seen the agility. We've seen the start stop. We've seen all that. We've never seen him truck anybody. I mean, he trucked him.
Yeah. Can we just, like, just again salute just the overall greatness of Patrick Mahomes? Because things like that, I think I've mentioned this before, things like that, they're great. Don't get me wrong. I don't go crazy for it because, like, I'm so accustomed to seeing him do things that we've never seen where I'm just sort of like, yeah, like that's Mahomes. That's what he does. Completely unexpected. Expect the unexpected. That's Patrick Mahomes. It was great. I mean, both of those plays were phenomenal. And especially in the context of the game when he wasn't having a ton of success throwing the ball, through a couple of interceptions. That's become, you know, sort of a thing this year, him throwing picks. In the context of all of that, that's what makes those runs that much more impressive is just the fact that the Chiefs really needed them. They absolutely needed them because the passing game really wasn't working the way that Mahomes, you know, would have liked them to. So, but as far as just the overall, like, wow factor, like, jaw-dropping impact, yeah, it's there. But I don't get, like, wild and crazy over him anymore because I'm just so accustomed to Mahomes doing wild and crazy things all the time that we never expect.
I got wild and crazy for that one. That one surprised me. By the way, another one of these, the Chiefs are 6-0, ridiculous, just crazy, just absurd numbers things. Patrick Mahomes leads the league in interceptions. His quarterback rating, I don't even know how far down the list it is of starting quarterbacks, but it is way down the list. Yeah. Like, you got to scroll to the next page kind of bad in quarterback rating. And the Chiefs are 6-0. They don't have anybody on offense. He's not playing up to his... Now, he's playing different is the reality for Mahomes. It's different. He's still playing very well because he's making plays like that. He's just playing different. But, I mean, he hasn't been great this year. He didn't have a great line yesterday. And all of these things. Like, we just sit here and they're 6-0 playing the schedule that they've played. It is remarkable to, like... And that's what, so back to the last hour, I'm like, everything about this to me, like, it's almost like last year when things were unraveling, I kept saying, hang tight. Like, they got Mahomes, they got Kelce, this defense is great, they'll be fine, they're equipped to win in the postseason. And I think all of that stuff is still true. Defense is even better. I don't think Travis Kelce is the same factor he was a year ago. I do think that's different. I just keep going back to, like, can they just continue to do this all year? And will there be enough reserves just coming through? Like, what I would hate and what, like, this, and I don't feel like it's going to happen, but I'm like, at what point does the wind come out of the sails and all the good fortune go the other way? And is probably sooner than later, honestly, probably not like something that's all of a sudden going to happen in the postseason, but it's been wild. And, like, in the pendulum swings and the, you know, the karma back to the middle of the NFL that exists, it's like, how much longer can 6-0 with Mahomes not putting up numbers at all and all these injuries? And I mean, he built it around the defense. I mean, that's the bottom line. But man, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's what the Chiefs have done and it's what they'll continue to do. And I think that I remember us having this conversation a few weeks ago about the Chiefs being comfortable playing this way. And it was kind of
that they are.
It was kind of a debate at the time between you and I. And I think that, you know, at the time, both of us were like, yeah, like they are comfortable playing this way. But at least my opinion was it's not the way that they want to play. It's not the way that in an ideal world they would like to play. Like, you look at Patrick Mahomes and his stat lines game by game. That's not the way that Patrick Mahomes would like to play. Those are not the stat lines that he would like to have. You know, you would love to be able to see more production in the passing game. Of course, the injuries play a large role in that for sure, but they're comfortable leaning into that. They're comfortable leaning into the run game and Kareem Hunt really being kind of the bell cow running back, at least as of now. And then really, you know, guys like Noah Gray, who had his best game as a pro yesterday. Kelce is out there and I think provides, of course, a lot of attention just because of who he is. Even just his presence on the field is going to attract attention. You know, and Jody Fortson is out there too. And then it's kind of a hodgepodge of receivers. They're comfortable with that. They're comfortable with the way that the defense is playing. But I think all in together, this is not the ideal way for the Chiefs to play, but it's working, it's successful, and there is literally, in my mind, no reason moving forward to think that that will change. Like, there's nothing, at least in the way that they've played, that I look at and I say, oh, that can't continue, or they're gonna lose games. Like, there really isn't. Even with Mahomes throwing a couple of interceptions.
It's the turnovers.
But they won by double digits yesterday, and it was never even really close. And he had two interceptions.
Well, I think because it was close until Purdy threw an interception in the end zone
there you go. Like, it honestly, it doesn't, I don't want to say it doesn't matter. It's less impactful if the Chiefs have turnovers when they win the turnover battle, when the defense is able to take the ball away from the opposition. And they did that yesterday. Spags is, you know, great at that sort of thing. So there's really nothing in my mind that says that even despite them not being able to play the kind of football or the brand of football that they would prefer to play, that anything will change and the wind will be taken out of their sails. I just don't see that.
I don't think anything's going to happen in the regular season. Their schedules, they've played the most difficult portion of their schedule. Now they're 6-0. Their schedule just isn't that bad the rest of the way. So, like, I don't think you're going to get into a situation perhaps where you've got some home field and some things you're concerned with, but by and large, they should have no issues until they get to the postseason. And now it was this way last year by this point, when for very different reasons, where it was like, everything will be fine. This is a really good, this is a team built to win in the postseason. And it still is, except the turnovers. The turnovers are something that cannot keep happening. That will bite you, at least in the history of the NFL. We know that. But the one thing that is sort of in that line, and I don't have the direct numbers in front of me, 6 weeks through the year, whatever, they are far less penalized than they have been in recent years. And I do think that's had a major, major impact on the margins at which they've been able to win by. Remember the Ravens game, the Bengals game. Like, there are a lot of different things where this could have gone the other direction. It has not, and they're 6-0, which means they're safe. But I do think, as they're, you know, sitting and having their Monday meetings, I think you have to start and say, guys, like, we can't turn the ball over 2 and 3 times a game. I know it's worked fine so far, but that can't happen in the postseason.
But to that point, you know who has the most interceptions since the start of last season? Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
You know who's right behind him is Sam Howell.
Like, it goes Patrick Mahomes, and we know, and then why Sam Howell. Is.
And that goes all the way back to the start of last season. They won a Super Bowl. So, you know, that conversation of, guys, we can't have 2 or 3 turnovers in a game and expect to win, you know, get through the playoffs. And they have. They did a year ago. They did. And they won. And so, like, I'm sure, again, this is a conversation of, yeah, like, it would be a lot easier. It would be a lot more advantageous for us if we took care of the ball, if we didn't turn it over. That hasn't been the reality, even going all the way back to last season, and they still won a championship. So again, like, I think it leans into, like, my whole opinion of, while that's not the brand of football that they would like to play, nobody wants to throw interceptions, nobody wants to turn the ball over, they're comfortable leaning into it because of what makes this team strong. And what makes this team strong is their resilience. What makes them strong is, even if the stat line for Mahomes is not ideal, he does things like those runs where he's able to keep you in the game and be able to find other ways to make it happen, which he did on 2 separate occasions yesterday against the Niners. And the defense is top level, and Steve Spagnuolo is the best defensive coordinator in the NFL. All of those things, they are absolutely comfortable playing within, even if that's not the way that they would choose to play.
Yeah, look, I thought you were going to kill me after it was either the Chargers or the Falcons game when I said, yeah, they're totally comfortable playing this way. I get that part of it. I think it's time to begin to wonder, can they do that all the way through? And yeah, I think they can.
They have.
They can, right, but that doesn't mean that's what they want to do, or they can get better at it.
It's the same, like, difference between, can they and do they want to? They might not have a choice.
But that's where we think about, like, what ways can this team still get better? And I don't mean by a player acquisition That's not what I'm saying, which is a way. That's one way of many they can. The problem for them is with the interceptions, and the and I think two of the biggest reasons that's happened over the last 2 years is A, they've been deficient at wide receiver. I mean, period. They just have been for the last 2 years. And B, they have a defense that 15 knows who his defense is, right? Like, he knows what that defense is capable of, and he is altering, I think, and taking more risk because he knows he can be bailed out, and they just don't have the kind of firepower offensively they have. Okay, that's it, it's the reality of it. I've told you a bunch of times, and it just more and more each week. This team right now and Mahomes reminds me of the early Brady years, that first sort of part of the Patriots dynasty, right? When you could just look back at those teams, and now, of course, we didn't know Brady at the time was going to be the GOAT like we know about Mahomes now. But if you just took that away and looked at sort of the numbers and things, like, that's what it reminds me of. It was hard to define what made those teams really good. They were always good on defense, right? And they always kind of felt like they were in control of the pace and the clock and all of those things. That's the way this Chiefs team feels to me. Every team that plays them, like, comes into the game feeling desperate, right? How are we going to beat them? And I would guess that there will be a couple of times in the regular season where the Chiefs get smacked a little bit. The remaining schedule, I don't know who that's going to be, but I think it's probably going to happen. But it's been so wild. Like, last year when they were struggling at this point, I don't think it was all that surprising. They didn't have anybody at wide receiver. They were trying to find themselves. They were trying to find their identity. Now they know their identity, but the deck that has been stacked against them this year is daunting. And that's what makes it so remarkable what they've done, and why it's so impressive. These coaches and these players and how they're all bought into this thing. And it just reminds me of the early year Patriots, where it just doesn't matter. Like, they're just going to beat you.
Yeah, I don't think that it's daunting at all. I think that it's unfortunate, and I think that it's, you know, sure, they would absolutely love to have their top guys not be injured and the different weapons offensively not be injured. And we heard today that Jalen Watson, who's had a breakout season so far, has a fractured ankle. And depending on the severity of it, he could be out for the year. Like, those things are definitely less than ideal for Kansas City, but I don't think it's daunting at all. And I'll tell you why. You go back to last season and you referenced when they were struggling. This is a Kansas City team that is battle-tested. They've got the calluses to prove it. They know what it was like when they had the deficiencies. And in some cases, those deficiencies have sort of repeated themselves this season. I think that the wide receiver shortage last year was a little bit self-inflicted. Like, they didn't have the depth chart that they wanted. This year, it's because of injuries. But still, the end result is basically the same, where you don't really have much depth and honestly, a lot of trust in your overall receiving core overall, and they have to play a different style of football. But they're battle tested, and they're calloused. They're resilient. They know that, you know, a year ago when they were losing these games, and that it made the path to a Super Bowl that much more difficult, that they weren't going to go through that again this season. It doesn't matter what it took. It didn't matter what hand they were dealt, what injuries they had, any of that. Mahomes playing great, Mahomes playing poorly, didn't matter. They did not want to put themselves in the same kind of predicament that they were in a year ago, where at one point they were battling to even make the playoffs, right? And then ultimately had to go on the road and go through that, you know, that challenge, that gauntlet to get all the way to a second straight Super Bowl. They didn't want to do that. And we heard Mahomes talk about that a lot during the offseason, about how, like, that the season ago, they grew a lot. It showed them a lot. And so I think because of that, that resilience has carried over into this season, where I think that even despite these things that have happened to them, the injuries and all of that, I don't think it's fazed them one bit. I think it's literally like, all right, we got to just figure it out. We're not going to get into our heads. We're not going to let it affect us. We're not going to let us get into a situation where we start losing games that we should be winning. they're just going to go out and they're going to find other ways to get it done. And they've done a masterful job at that through six games.
Well, let's remember this, because remember last year they were 6-1 to start the year. They were 6-1 going into, they hadn't had their bye yet. So going into this week of the season, they were 6-1. Then they had their dud against the Broncos. And then when they came out of their bye and they lost, what would they lost 4 out of 6 games.
Yeah.
I would imagine, I would guess that if we went through and looked at everything, it would probably be, there'd be a lot of similarities in the 6-0 start and the 6-1 start last year. And then it did start to bite them in the butt. Now, I would tell you that identity-wise, yes, as long as the defense plays this way, you love the Chiefs' chances in the postseason to go to another Super Bowl, because it translates to cold weather, right? Same thing as last year. If Mahomes is healthy, if the defense is playing this way, if Kelsey's there in the put, like, you love their chances. But we'll see if they're able to maintain it now, because at any point, I feel like at any point, the margins have been pretty thin and that can go the other way. But again, like, let's remember that when, if they lose 2 or 3 games and it's, and you're like, oh God, is that enough? We're just like, hang on.
But what indicators do you have, or have you seen through 6 games?
Well, that tell only you that, that only what that they've very done, easily, that they can't only do. That they very easily could have lost 3 of the games.
But they
that
didn't.
That they've won.
So
I, no,
like,
I know.
What are the, when you watch this team play, I mean, because there's got to be something
they're turning the ball over too much, and listen, I'm not by any means saying that I'm worried about, I wasn't worried about the Chiefs when they lost 4 out of 6 last year, but what I'm saying is they were almost, and I know they lost a game, they lost that opener to the Lions. But they were a more dominant team through this first 7 weeks of an NFL season last year than they were this year, and then they lost a bunch of games, and everybody. What I'm saying is, like, even if they were 3-3 right now, which the Falcons, the Bengals, the Ravens, all three, I guarantee you those teams feel like they should have beat them. They didn't. They should have. They think that. And so, as we get to this point, if it ever starts to in a game, turn the ball over too much, remember that their defense is right now awesome. That Watson losses, I didn't see that. That sucks. That's a big loss. And they still have Mahomes, even when he's playing this way. And you think Kelsey in the postseason will be able to ramp it up. So just what I'm saying is, nobody panic.
Yeah, I don't think anybody at 6-0 is going to panic today. Like,
no, you're
that's
not. But nobody at 6-1 was panicking last year either.
Yeah,
and then everybody by Christmas was panicking.
Yeah, but there were. I think it's different. And for me, it's, yeah, they lost a bunch of games last season that caused a significant amount of panic. But I think even if they do drop a couple of games here and there, and I don't think they will because of their schedule. But even if they do, at least my panic is not going to be anywhere close to what it was a year ago, because we're used to it. Like, this is a team that can play ugly and win ugly, right? And that was uncommon a year ago. That was not something that we were used to seeing from Kansas City. We were used to seeing Superman out there, and he had, like, runs yesterday that were great, right? But we were used to seeing, like, the identity of this team just being jaw-dropping all the time, and everything that they could execute, and it just was like they were the cream of the crop. And it was different a year ago because it was kind of like a punch in the gut, like, okay, this is not that same team. This is different. It was something that the fan base was completely not used to whatsoever. And this year they are. And I'm definitely more comfortable with watching this team play and win games ugly and lean on their defense and lean with the running game and, you know, do all of the things that they did a year ago, where maybe some of those games didn't end up their way, and they certainly didn't. They are so far this year, but even if they don't, they're battle-tested. And I think that the fan base is battle-tested now too. And you know that you can still win a Super Bowl in playing less than your best football. Like, that's just the way that it is. You can still get there and make that run into the postseason, even when things are not ideal for you. And so there's a level of comfort there that I have throughout the course of this season that I didn't have a season ago, even if they do drop some games. You mentioned the turnovers. That's true. It's true, but They also won the turnover battle yesterday. So there's nothing to me that indicates that anything, even if they're not, even if some things and facets of the game are less than ideal, there's nothing right now that tells me that they're just going to go on this massive slide.
I don't think they're going on a massive slide. I only have these conversations to think, should they do something to get better? That's the only reason I'm thinking about this stuff right now. If they don't, of course, they're going to be in a good position either way. My thought has always been this year, no matter what, all I'm thinking about is a third Super Bowl. And I'm trying to watch the teams around the Chiefs. And last night, that was a big reason I wanted to watch that Steelers-Jets game, because you had two potentially significant factors in the game. Russell Wilson getting his first start with Pittsburgh and Devontae Adams now as the Jets make that trade. We'll talk about that game here in this hour. But those are the things that I want to know. Like, has anything changed around them, and what's out there? Can they do anything to get just a little bit better? Just a little bit better to just do these, because they get the luxury now at 6-0 of doing that. I still think, too, one of the biggest reasons this team, as it's the penalties, man. They just are not. The turnovers have been bad, but they're not having those drive-ending penalties. Like, you remember some of the penalty conversations with Jawan Taylor lining up offside? Like, all it's like, my God, like, what is happening? They're just not doing any of that this year, which has been one of the great things I think about this team.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much difference between a season ago and this year, even though it hasn't been ideal for Kansas City in a lot of different facets. I've just got this calm. I mean, even when Nick Bosa is getting, doing whatever he wants to Wanya Morris, or the Niners defense is picking off Mahomes or whatever it is. I don't know. I sat there with a level of calm that I haven't had before with the Chiefs, because it's like, you know what? They're undefeated. They're going to play ugly. They're going to muddy the game up. They're going to muck it up, and they're going to win. And that's what they did. And that's what they do. And I think that's what they'll continue to do.
Yeah, and it was yesterday through a couple of really big plays with Mahomes on the ground with his legs. And they'll just keep finding ways in a season that, man, has been wild with injury. Not just for them, for everybody. Let's talk about that Sunday night game. Either of those teams do anything, because they both made pretty significant changes to make themselves AFC contenders as we wonder about a Chiefs Super Bowl. We'll talk about that. Any of the other things to look for in the NFL from the weekend, that's next. Sports Daily, all Brockton Caster. On the way out, let's give away some HTO. You can win by texting the keyword T to the short code 20357. That'll get you a free iced tea, a free rain coffee, iced or hot. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Again, T to the short code 20357. We'll be right back. More Sports Daily right after this.
.975 and 1240 KFH.
We'll talk about Pepin Suter Remodeling. Four generations of contractor influence. The Pepin Suter team does fantastic work. You can go check out some of the work. Pepin Suter, PEPINSUTER.com. They did the work on our summer remodel. We had our kitchen remodeled, and Pepin came in and his staff did an unbelievable job. They did exactly what we wanted them to do. I can't even tell you how wild some of it was. Not moving, cutting out and moving cabinets and, doing all the crazy things that they did. They made it happen. They walked us through each step of the way, and they took great care of our family during it. That's the part that made me the most happy, is they gave us a functioning kitchen while they were remodeling our kitchen at the end of every day. They made sure we could use it. They cleaned up. Go to pepinsuter.com to check out their work, or give them a call, 316-573-6822. Again, that's 573-6822. If the quality of work matters, if the quality of the people and the way they take care of your family matters, give Pepin Suter a call for all your home remodeling needs. Welcome back into Sports Daily here, Tommy. We look around the NFL. I thought this was a big week, and still is a big week, by the way, in the NFL, as we get some big games tonight that we'll look at some bets and stuff in our next segment. But as we look at the rest of the schedule yesterday, I thought one of the more interesting games as it pertains to the Chiefs was actually the Sunday night game. The Jets get in Devontae Adams, his first game back, kind of less than a week to prepare, all of those things. It's so wild to me that the Jets finally figure out a way to have a functioning offense, which gets much easier when you incorporate Breece Hall, quite frankly, by the way, everybody. Breece Hall's very good at football. And now their defense can't play football. The Steelers gained 409 yards of offense on that Jets defense for all those years that was so good. Now that the offense is functioning, their defense fails them. And I don't know what to take more out of it. The fact that Russell Wilson led Pittsburgh to 409 yards of offense and 37 points, right? Or that that's just the Jets defense playing that badly. Either way, significant in the landscape of the AFC.
Well, I thought that Harris ran the ball really, really well for the Steelers. I mean, that certainly helps too when you've got an effective running game to, you know, get out there and set up Russell Wilson. I'll be the first to say that I was not a fan of Mike Tomlin making the change away from Justin Fields to Russell Wilson. I felt like Fields, they needed to continue to ride with him because he's their best bet long term. But man, Wilson played a really good game. I mean, he was pretty efficient. He threw the ball pretty well, didn't make a lot of mistakes. It was kind of, I hate to say it, vintage Russell Wilson to an extent. George Pickens, it certainly helps when you've got him too. And Pat Freiermuth, you know, is a good safety valve as well for the Steelers. But that was the most effective we've seen Pittsburgh be offensively basically all season. It had been really their success led by their defense and the offense doing just enough. And, you know, really the yards that the Steelers were able to get, I do think I'm going to tip my cap a little bit to Russell Wilson, that he came out there and he played really, really well. Now, again, the Jets defense was not good. That was not what we have become accustomed to with the Jets. But yeah, I mean, credit goes to Russell Wilson, Najee Harris, and, you know, the Steelers had a really, really solid game plan to put points on the board.
Harris got a lot of his yardage right there at the end, but they committed to it. And when you combine he and Warren, it was good enough. But I think if you're going to tell me that Russell Wilson will do two things, not turn the ball over and find a way to utilize George Pickens, which for George Pickens, who I agree with Chris Collinsworth, one of the better go-get-the-ball receivers in football, and Russell Wilson, who, say whatever you want, has always been one of the best deep ball throwers in this league. The Steelers are for real. I'm just going to tell you that right now. The Steelers are very for real. The way that they can play defense, the way that they can get after the quarterback. If Russell Wilson can replicate what he did last night, look out. Because that's a team that I would absolutely put up there with Baltimore. I would put up there with, well, I mean, I think that's your main, and Houston, I guess, as main contenders in the AFC for the Chiefs. Elsewhere, you saw the Lions have the big comeback win. That was really good for them. I don't think that was it's funny that the Vikings lose that game coming off of a bye, but I don't think it was a total indictment on them. More about the Lions, but I think that was obviously the other really, really big one everyone was looking at. The Bills win again. All of a sudden, they're 5-2. But, you know, a good delivery so far with some games tonight, Tommy, that will tell us a lot about the Ravens, the Bucks, and potentially the Chargers.
The early window was a lot of fun yesterday. You mentioned the Lions and the Vikings game. The Lions had a big lead. I mean, they had a great second quarter, and then here come the Vikings led by Sam Darnold. And, you know, of course, he's got those weapons that, you know, they were able to get it done and you know, ultimately get back into the game. And it took the Lions at the very end, you know, to squeak by when I'm sure that they probably thought midway through the game that it was going to be, you know, a cakewalk, I guess, you know, to an extent. But it wasn't. That was a great divisional matchup. Then the other game that you didn't mention that I think was huge was the Packers and the Texans. The Packers able to beat Houston. They did a phenomenal job defensively on C.J. Stroud. A phenomenal job. That game went down to the wire also. And Houston just about pulled out the victory. But man, give credit to Green Bay's defense, which is really stout. And, you know, I think that for me, while offensively Green Bay didn't have their best day, with what we saw from the Packers, that solidifies them, I think, right alongside both the Lions and the Vikings as, you know, the NFC North being the best division in the NFL. That's going to be just wild down the stretch, which team, and the Bears are there too. They're probably a step behind, but that entire division is loaded. And so the fact that the Lions were able to hand the Vikings their first loss of the season and the Packers beat the Texans, man, this division is totally up for grabs.
I would say this. Do the Texans or the Vikings losing in those two headline games make you think of the Texans or the Vikings as any less of? They both lost on game-winning field goals. Nope. Me neither.
Not at all.
Which just means we got great football, right? And if they played again tomorrow, who knows what would happen? I agree. I think those are absolute. All four of those teams are Super Bowl contenders.
Now, I will say with the Texans, though, there is a caveat to that. They really miss Nico Collins. Sure, they had to. They had to lean back, right? Well, he's on IR, so he's got to miss a handful of games. But of course, you know, CJ Stroud had to really, really lean on Steph Diggs, which for good reason, right? But he had a hard time because he didn't have that other weapon. He tried to feed it to Tank Dell some, and Dell didn't have a catch, didn't log a single catch in the game. And a lot of that is credit to the Green Bay defense. They knew that, of course, Houston was down Nico Collins and who the other guys were that they were going to have to focus on. So, but it doesn't really change things for me long term, but you could definitely tell Houston was missing Collins
for sure, and everybody's missing players right now. That's the other thing too, that this is all hard to, like, it's a season within a season within a season. We just finished the first third. Everybody's banged up. What does the final third look like? Who knows? Probably very different than it looks right now, because we don't know. Availability is one of the big concerns of the NFL, and that leads us to tonight. So we get Ravens and Bucks, Chargers and Cardinals. Ravens and Bucks, a total of 50. The Buccaneers are 3.5-point dogs at home. The Chargers are 1-point favorites on the road. These are two interesting games. I don't have a great bet for anybody right off the top here, because I think these are all. I would probably lean Ravens, even though it's got the hook there, the road hook, which is always dreadful. But of all of these things, that's probably the one I'm looking at right now. But I really got to dig in, because I think these are going to be two awesome football games tonight.
I think they're going to be a lot of fun. I'm really, really looking forward to both of them. And the fact that the Ravens, have this opportunity again. I think that because the Ravens are so high profile and they have been for so long, that it's just going to be a preconceived notion that they're going to win this game and they're going to win it big. But don't sleep on the Buccaneers. And I'm not saying that you are. I'm just saying in general, like, don't sleep on the Bucs.
Oh, I like the Bucs.
Because they have been sort of under the radar for a while now. I like, at home, the Bucs getting points. I think it might come down to, the very last couple minutes of this game. It wouldn't shock me at all if the Ravens win, but the Bucs cover. As of now, what I'm looking at is that, they've got the Bucs are getting 3.5 at home. I kind of like taking the points in this particular game. The other one, the Chargers are getting a point on the road. I think the Chargers can win by double digits. I think some of it's going to come down to the way that, Justin Herbert is able to, get the ball out and how effective he'll be. Because, the conversation, and not to bring up something totally different, but the conversation, and rightfully so, has been that Patrick Mahomes hasn't played up to his, best level. Justin Herbert really hasn't either this season. He's been very average. He's been very, very average this year.
Yeah. That don't have their weapons. Right. We'll just put it that way. Yeah.
If Herbert can, find a way, and there's a long list of wide receivers that are questionable tonight for the Chargers, even if just a couple of them are able to go, I think that the Chargers can win by a touchdown or more.
The Chargers play defense and run the ball, and they have a playmaking quarterback. I mean, their formula is not that different from the Chiefs.
Yep.
I don't think their defense is as good, but their formula is not that different. And I would say this about the Bucs, and I probably won't touch that line. I'm just trying to look for. I'll do a bunch of like the same game parlay type things with player props. Bucs have got to stop Derrick Henry. If the Bucs can stop Derrick Henry, I love the Buccaneers. I love the Baker Mayfield story. I love a lot of what they can do. If they can stop Derrick Henry, I'll be willing to call him a Super Bowl contender. I'll be willing to at that point. So that's kind of where I'm looking tonight. And we'll see. Yeah, that goes for everybody, by the way. Got to be able to stop Derrick Henry in the postseason, I think, with the Ravens. That's what it'll come down to.
Like the Chiefs did, by the way.
Like the Chiefs, 100% like the Chiefs did. Absolutely. Let's talk baseball. I know Ken wants us to, and others. World Series is set. The dream for Major League Baseball. Dodgers, Yankees. Hard not to be a little excited about it, even if you hate both teams. We'll come back. We'll talk about it on Sports Day.
Nice. 97.5 and 1240 KFH on the KFH.
My ratings honks are going to love this one, right? Like all the people that can't talk about baseball without talking about ratings and how many people are watching XYZ, which is always so ridiculous to me because baseball is very much a regionalized sport where you kind of root and follow your favorite team and then maybe you'll tune into the World Series. Just reality. Some people love to point it out that it's not the NFL. And guess what? It's not the NFL, and they're still making money hand over fist, and their athletes are paid higher than any other sport. So, with all that being said, the rating honks are going to love this one. Yankees, Dodgers, not only is it the big payrolls and the big markets and literally the perfect matchup when it comes to that stuff, what I like about it and what will bring me to the table on this is that you have really, well, you have the two best players of a generation, like of the post-Trout generation. It's Judge and Ohtani. And for Ohtani, it's like maybe best ever. You get those guys front and center. That's what makes this special as much as anything else for baseball to me.
It's going to be more of a spectacle than typically it is. And that's not a knock on the World Series. I love watching the World Series. But, you know, when you've got teams that are not overall national darlings, it will be that much more of an overall spectacle and an event and all of that. This is what Major League Baseball has been dying for, a World Series between, you know, these two teams. And honestly, regardless of the outcome of the NLCS, had it been the Yankees-Mets Subway Series, that would have been, you know, a good consolation prize for Major League Baseball. They would have been good with that too. Not as much as Yankees Dodgers, obviously, for obvious reasons, in the two largest media markets in the country. But, you know, the Subway Series, I think, you know, definitely would be a good consolation for them. But at the end of the day, this has the star power. It's got the large markets. It's got the payroll. It's got everything that you need to build in to make it must-see TV. The way that I probably, and the way I typically approach the World Series, if one of my teams is not in it, is I'll watch when there isn't a competing primetime football game. Maybe not Thursday Night Football, but the other ones. But with the Yankees and Dodgers, that probably goes above whatever primetime NFL game is on. It really honestly does.
If I'm being honest, they'll probably both, they'd be on par. I would have loved to see the Guardians win it. That's who I was rooting for more than anybody. And like, honestly, it would have been like Guardians, Mets, probably Dodgers, Yankees. But the reality is I'm more likely to watch this one because of Ohtani, and it's not just Ohtani and Judge. You maybe have two of the other top five players in baseball and Mookie Betts and Juan Soto, right? Yeah. Like it's not just those two guys, but yes, it is. It will become much more of a like cultural event.
Yeah. And then you go even further down and you've got Giancarlo Stanton, who has had a torrid run in the postseason. You've got Freddie Freeman. I know that he's battling, you know, some health issues, but you've got Freddie, like the star power from top to bottom. We haven't even gotten to the pitching staffs yet. Like it's there for both teams.
Giancarlo Stanton is one of the great postseason hitters of all time. And as he comes out of a series where he won the MVP and Ken says he deserved it even with his .222 average. Of course he did. Every clutch hit when you look up for the Yankees is Giancarlo Stanton. Royals know that all too well. He cost them a series in a lot of ways. It is interesting. It's been a long time. They've met a lot in the World Series, but not in either one of our lifetimes. You know, like, so yeah. You've had an entire generation of baseball fans, really probably about three generations of baseball fans that have never seen this World Series matchup, which is pretty crazy. But here it is. And it starts Friday. I wish it started sooner. I get it, but I kind of wish they'd just start it right away. That's a long time to wait. But you know, it'll be here before we know it. All right. We'll come back. We'll tell you about the programming tonight, which game you're going to hear with us. It's all coming as we wrap up Sports Day.